Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. Did I change it? I did change it. Okay.
I thought we were going to call it the Hardy's Picks podcast.
Are we?
I don't know.
Well, I don't have a graphic for that, so I put up Outlawed.
Okay. A few people like mentioned it, and I thought it was pretty nice.
You like it, yeah? What was what we're calling it?
No, now I feel like pressured about
no,
it.
No, pressure.
Like
no pressure.
I'm trying to change
no,
it.
No,
I'm nagging about it.
Just changed the name of the podcast. Didn't tell Jamie and I don't remember this
yes,
conversation.
We did.
Is this before or after you kicked me in the head the other day? Exactly. So welcome to the something podcast, whatever it's called. It's good to be back though. It's been a while. Are we recording, Jamie? Is everything? I mean, okay, good. Feels like it's been ages since we've been here.
Yeah, it has been ages. I'm sorry. This is probably the most inconsistent podcast of YouTube.
Maybe that's what we should call it. Welcome to the inconsistent MMA podcast.
Yeah, sorry.
We've been
about
busy
that.
Though. I mean, it's not like we've just been kind of hanging out. I mean, we've been traveling. We've been into Europe a few times, and we've been to Florida. We spent a few weeks at Universal Studios.
Okay, yeah, but this is all MMA related. Don't start writing in the comments like, stop being traveling, start training. This
was
all MMA related.
You were training
okay,
with Hannah Goldie, weren't
like...
you? Give a shout
yeah,
out to
yeah,
Hannah.
She was awesome. So awesome to train with. Super nice, great grappling. That was, yeah, it was awesome.
The whole gym, Fusion XL.
Oh, Alice won and got fight of the night.
Is
and she
right?
was training there. Yeah.
Nice.
It's also very, very nice.
Yeah. Good little group, a good little gym. Nice group of people. Really, really cool training. So we'll be back to see them very soon when we're back in, well, we're Hollywood's the next time we're in Florida, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'll probably just go up.
So yeah, we've been mad busy.
And we've missed you.
We have. I was just saying, I keep coughing all the dust in this room. It's like we move some stuff around and turn the lights on, and like there's just cobwebs, like and like the cobwebs up in that corner are like yeah. It's like wool. That's like the density of it.
I've had a few people like question, like, oh, how do you deal with the dust? That's what you do. You deal with it.
You just have...
Imagine me going on the top of each one of these little things. And this goes all the way up on several walls. And he wants to put them on the ceiling. So,
well, no, I mean, I have started putting them on the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
I got some new ones the other day. I was showing Jamie. Should we have a show and tell? I put them over there and they're in that bag.
Jeez, they're going to be like, they've already gone off on a tangent.
And I got my Dimebag shirt on from when we went to see Pantera. Although that seems like a long time ago now. God, it seems a long time since we saw you last. So I got Rocky, which... So, Jamie, you think this one's out Rocky 2, don't you? I am unfortunately not a Rocky expert.
No?
It's Rocky 1.
Rocky 1. Yeah. They all kind of run into one another for me, to be honest.
I struggled with Rocky's...
I was Karate Kid. That was my thing.
I didn't like that one either.
And I got a Foot Soldier, which is sick. We got these in Paris, didn't we?
Yeah.
Awesome. I dig a good show and tell. I won't get all the Hot Wheels out because there's like 500 of them.
There was a point in the hotel where it covered something like that wide and he stacked them on top of each other and it was quite concerning. How are we going to fit this back and why do you need so many Hot Wheels?
Thing is, right, I've been digging into this a little bit and... I used to get like they weren't Hot Wheels because it was Matchbox cars. We've got some of those around here somewhere as well. So that's like the UK version of Hot Wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get one every now and then. I used to get such a mad adrenaline rush from going into the toy shop and there being this whole wall of Matchbox cars and me getting to choose one to add to my collection. And the thing is as well, it's like I have a bin in the garage downstairs that is filled with these cars. And not only does it have my collection in there, but it has my dad's collection in there as well. So I've got cars that are from like 1975 that are definitely made out of lead and painted with lead paint. So like if you licked it, you would like die. You know what I mean? It's like there's definitely some toxic toys in there, but it's a great collection. But you know what it is? Jamie's looking for Matchbox cars now. I can see him scanning.
So how does it feel like looking back?
There's one. There's a Matchbox.
For you as a kid, you were probably like, when I grow up, I'm going to buy all of them.
I remember.
I want to choose one. I want to buy all of them.
I remember going
and
to
you
Toys
have.
Well, yeah. Not all of them. I have quite a lot of discipline, if I'm honest. I'd buy a lot more if I had the space for them. But I remember standing in the Lego aisle at Toys R Us when I was like 12 and thinking to myself, you know, one day I'm not going to have to choose.
I'm going to have no adults one day around.
There's not going to be a limit. I'm just going to have all of it. One of everything, please. Anyway, this is an MMA podcast, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. You went about by getting all of them, you know, by fighting pajamas.
We were talking. What?
Fighting with pajamas.
Fighting with pajamas.
Yeah, like karate.
What about it?
It's a joke. It just wasn't a good one. Let's just continue.
Oh, that's it's what it was. The podcast. At least we figured out what the problem was there. It wasn't me. It was your bad.
No, it was just, it's just too layered for you to figure
too
out.
Too layered.
So, yeah.
It's too layered for me to figure out.
It was like, last night, I did it. I did a layered joke because he only likes jokes that are like, you know, super smart. And I like to laugh, so I don't set my standard that high. It's pretty low. And I made a joke, and he didn't get it, and I explained to him, and then I just can't remember what it was.
I don't remember what it was. So it can't be that good of a joke, can it? Oh, my goodness. See, now...
Okay, let's get into the podcast. This
tapology.
Is, like, too long.
Tapology.
Let's start. Vicente Luque, Kevin Holland.
I'm on it. Shout out to Tapology. I love you guys, but my goodness, if I search something on Google, the ads on Tapology that I get.
Yeah, it's getting crazy.
Like I've currently got Thai Boxing Superstore on like 5 different parts of the page because I was looking at ads the other day. Yes, all right, I'll buy something.
That's so hard for you to commit to buying something, isn't it? Oh my God.
I'm terrible at purchasing things. I'm so bad at buying things I don't need. Okay, look, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we starting?
Vicente Luque.
Okay, so this is in a different order. So is the fight after that then Bautista Pachimex?
No, I feel like this is going to change on Tuesday and it's going to be Vicente Luque, Kevin Holland, then Mario Bautista Pachimex.
Okay, so are we going off Wikipedia or are we going off Tapology or are we going off UFC stats? Because that might be
different.
Well,
I'm just going off the order that I think in my head.
I've got a mad craving for rhubarb and custard. Remember rhubarb and custard?
No. What
Jamie
is
knows.
That?
Jamie knows. It's a type of sweet.
Yeah, but I'm not...
I'm hungry. It's my hunger's kicking
here.
In, you see. So... As soon as my hunger kicks in, I start going through cravings of things that
Vicente Luque.
All right. I'll have a drink.
Kevin Holland.
Okay, we're starting there, are we? Let me pull the
Let's matchup. Start there. So Kevin Holland is fighting at 170. This is good, right? Although I believe in his skills at 185 because sometimes mentally he kind of doesn't care... As well.
I was going to say, he's weighing in at 170. He might not fight. He might just, you know.
Yeah, but I think sometimes when they have bigger grapplers, we've seen him get controlled or submitted and stuff. But he does look very small, like bone-wise and everything in comparison. He can
he's
generate
gangly,
a lot. Yeah.
Kind of long and...
I feel like when he fights at 170 in comparison to middleweight, he's, I don't know if it's the diet, I don't know if, like, what about it is, but he seems more dialed in when he fights at 170. There's just more of a seriousness to it. I don't know if he has more pressure on himself because he thinks, well, this is my weight class, I'm not just fighting bigger people. I don't know if that affects him, but definitely feel that he fights better at 170.
He might be a little bit... more forgiving of himself at middleweight as well because he's like, well, you know, these guys are bigger than me.
Yeah.
Whereas at welterweight...
Like, he'll fight more.
Like, he should win.
Exactly, yeah. He'll fight more.
This is quite a well-matched fight, really. I like the way that Vicente Luque fights, but I do certainly think that we've seen his peak. You know what I mean? Like, he had a really good streak around that time where he beat Woodley and Chiesa. But... I don't know. Since then, I feel like I mean, he beat Dos Anjos, but Dos Anjos has always been too small for welterweight. Lost to Buckley and then beat Garimbo. But I feel like that was a fight that was kind of almost a tee up for Garimbo to put a known name on his record.
Yeah, you know? Because he had that victory and then The Rock got involved, got him housed. Like, a bunch of things happened. So he had quite a rise with him. So when he...
Yeah,
but
he
I mean,
he
looked
was supposed to, I mean,
way
he was
too much for him
as well.
Yeah,
But I do think that Luque is that guy, though, isn't he? He is very, very good. I just feel like there's going to be a small portion of people that are going to be ahead of him because they are streaking towards the belt or, you know, earlier in their career, but, you know, close enough to their peak. I don't know.
So why do you think Vicente Luque went from a really good streak to kind of veering off a little bit?
I mean, well, you look at that. So he was on a 4-fight win streak, right? He, mm-hmm. You can really go quite a way back into his career, right? The last time he was stopped, which was 2013, he got caught in an arm triangle. Right. But aside from that, all of his losses, so he's got armbar, unanimous decision, split decision, arm triangle, unanimous decision. Now he's signed with the UFC, right? And now he's going to win a bunch of fights and he's going to lose a decision to Leon Edwards. Then he's going to win a bunch of fights and stop a bunch of people. And then he's going to lose a decision to Wonderboy. Then he's going to win a bunch of fights, stop all of them. Nico Price, Randy Brown, Tyron Woodley, Michael Chiesa lose a decision to Belal. That's the point. And if you look at that as a pattern in his record, the next fight, he's supposed to get back on top.
Mm.
He's supposed to restart his win streak again before he loses a decision. But he got TKO'd or he got knocked out by Jeff Neal.
Yeah.
Now, beating Dos Anjos by decision over 5 rounds, like, it was a good fight, but it was between a guy that's, you know, not massive for the weight class compared to some of the modern day welterweights, but technically is good and maybe just past his peak compared to someone that's not really big enough for the weight class that's definitely past their peak.
Mm.
So Luque beating him by decision, you know, was acceptable. Should have probably stopped him though, really. I know Dos Anjos is tough, but that was a fight where I think Vicente would have felt like he should have stopped him, really, you know. And then he lost to Buckley. Like, he's been stopped twice now for the first time in his career by strikes.
Yeah.
You know? And I just wonder whether his confidence is where it needs to be. And the thing is as well, because someone like Kevin Holland, because they can have a tendency to do wild stuff, it might make Luque a little bit timid. You know, it might make him a little bit cautious because he's not really want to grapple. He won his last fight by submission. But I don't know whether he's going to want to grapple with Kevin Holland because he's mad tricky. Very, very flexible. Difficult to control.
But maybe that's what makes Vicente Luque think that he can wrap around the head and shoulder better. Because I think Garimbo is also very lanky with his arms, right? They're not like super muscular. So when you think about how you can squeeze those people. Yeah, like, maybe. That's a really good thing. And Vicente Luque does have that, and he has it. And I like when he goes for... I would prefer it not to be an anaconda, because when the way he rolled over in his last fight, I mean, fair play that he got it.
Mm.
But Garimbo didn't really look like he was doing the right things to get out of it, you know? Whereas, like somebody else would have gotten out of that.
Well, Chiesa and Woodley, that was a Bravo or a DOS, depending.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know why he went for an anaconda on that one. I felt like that was unnecessary.
But I feel like the best thing for him to do is to, instead of wasting energy doing that on Kevin Holland and potentially burning his arms out, which he still could potentially do, even though Bravo's less arm burning than anaconda, in my opinion. I still feel like he's going to be better to beat Kevin Holland up a little bit.
Yeah, but you know? Then if you look at Kevin Holland in his last fight versus Gunnar Nelson when he fought in London, like the first round, Kevin should have, you know, the fight should have been stopped. It was just because it was the last 10 seconds, you kind of let it go a little bit. But I think Gunnar Nelson was out. He got up, you know, he was like on wobbly feet. But in the fast forward third round, and Gunnar Nelson had an arm choke. He didn't end up getting, you know, like I said, Kevin Holland has really good grappling and he's good at getting out of positions. But it was also something where, like, Vicente Luque can look to capitalize and have more power to do so. I think Luque has really good, fundamental striking. Like yeah, clean, yeah. fundamental striking.
Yeah, he's not a good clean striker.
Yeah, it's not like super fancy. It's not too, but it reminds me of when I've trained in Holland, for example, that they do, you know, Dutch drills and you do some sort of patterns. Like he has that very well, and he very much represents that type of striking when he fights. Whereas Kevin Holland, like, who knows what he's going to throw at you?
Kung Fu, right?
Yeah. Kung Fu. Like, who knows? But it generates a lot of power. Look how he was able to drop Gunnar Nelson in that first round. It does generate a lot of power.
And with that style as well, it helps with him being, you know, taller and longer. 81-inch reaches. Like, you put that into perspective, John Jones is 84 and a half. Like, Kevin Holland is a welterweight. He has basically got John Jones' build as a light heavyweight.
Jeez. You know,
if he used it properly.
Yeah. I feel like those knees that he throws up the middle and like the strikes, even though he's not very muscular like Joaquin Buckley, he is able to generate a lot of force based on the whipping motions of his limbs that seem to just, he's just so relaxed. It's very hard to be that relaxed. Mm.
I think this is a hard one to pick because I think it's like you kind of know what never, you're going to get with Luque. Like you know what Luque is going to show up because he always shows up well conditioned. He's disciplined with his striking. If he hits the ground, he's very, very good with front headlock controls and head and arm attacks. But then if Kevin Holland shows up and he's like serious and he's, you know, utilizing his long limbs and making it difficult for Luque to close distance, and then when he does, he's, you know, chaotic scrambles on the ground where he's, you know, he's focused on winning the positions, then I could see Kevin Holland winning this. I could see him, more than anything, I could see him TKOing Vicente Luque. And I wouldn't have said that 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But I feel like now, I could see Kevin Holland hitting him with like a back fist or something, you know.
Yeah.
How'd you pick it?
I'm sick of picking Kevin Holland fights.
Oh, I was going to say.
Because I always pick the opposite. Like, I always think like, oh no, this time he's going to come, he's going to be mentally there, and that time he's not. And then next time I'm like, this time he's going to come. And he just does the opposite of whatever I pick. So I feel like I can give him a victory by picking Vicente.
What's...
literally, I'm sick of Kevin Holland.
You're gonna pick Vicente because you're sick of picking the Kevin Holland. I wonder what Kevin Holland's record is at welterweight compared to middleweight. Because I'm just looking at. So he was back at welterweight for his last one. His three before that were middleweight. Then he was there's two losses at welterweight, but MVP and Della Maddalena, beat Chiesa, beat Ponzinibbio. He's all over the place, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm gonna pick Vicente. I think he's more. I'm just gonna go with the safe option this time.
Safe option. All right then.
Well not like safe, but you know.
I just feel like this.
He's more reliable.
Yeah. He's
I'll
more
go with
reliable,
the reliable
for sure.
Option.
He's more reliable. He's the yeah.
Like every time I've met him, he's been the same person.
Yeah.
You know, it's been like it's consistent. No, I just go in and I train and I come and I give a good performance and I do this and I do that. And
yeah,
it's like the same
like,
every
but
time.
That's the thing is that being consistent is if that is consistent, then at this point, it might have dipped a little bit.
Yeah, but his last fight winning in a minute is going to give him 33? Confidence. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like he's been in the UFC for a while.
I hope he's not watching this. He's only 33. Like, I thought he was like 37, if I'm honest.
I think that's because you think...
Kevin Holland's 32. Is it just because I'm really, really old? Is that what it is? Like, every day I find new gray hairs in my beard.
So you're picking Kevin Holland?
I have no idea.
Okay, but we need to move on.
I don't like this kind of pressure. So you're picking Luque because of consistency?
Yes.
All right, well, I'll pick Kevin Holland then because...
Because wild card.
Because
why
wild
not?
Card, yeah. Back fist.
Okay.
Back fist to flying knee. Early second round.
You know, I read this comment that it was like, don't bet on women's fights because, you know, this doesn't make no sense. Don't bet on Kevin Holland fights. That don't make no sense.
So women's fights and Kevin Holland yeah, fights, is that what you recommend? Neither. Okay, so we're moving on. So we've got one apiece then.
Yeah.
I'll go Kevin Holland then, I think. I just don't know. I mean, Luque could definitely win. Definitely. But I feel like if Kevin Holland shows up as a good version of himself, and you make a good point about him looking, I just think his expectations of himself are higher at welterweight.
So, I just think he doesn't have the energy to be goofing around.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the extra calories.
Yeah.
So you're just more miserable.
Uh-huh. And plus he's going to watch this podcast and he's going to be upset with the fact that you've not picked him. And he's going to be super motivated. And he's going to be like, on the post-fight interview.
Well,
like,
make me pick you next time then.
He's like, I watched the Outlaw Picks podcast. Although they'll definitely beat that out. The Picks podcast.
Okay, next fight. Come on.
All right. I'm excited about this one as well. This is a good card, this is. I'm excited for all of these fights. Nothing on the undercard stands out to me, if I'm honest. But the main card's solid. Okay, Mario Bautista, Patchy Mix. Is that the next one? That's what it is on Wikipedia. So, Patchy Mix making his UFC debut. I am so glad he's getting this opportunity. He is a very, very good fighter. He's only 31. He's got a tremendous amount of experience. 20 wins and 1 loss. 13 submissions. 2 knockouts. He was also 11-0 as an amateur with 8 finishes. He's a very, very good fighter. Long, southpaw. Fits into this division very, very well. Now, I think him being matched up against Bautista in his debut is also a really, really good matchup because it's very winnable for both sides. Like, Bautista's got good front foot pressure and he's a good boxer. He doesn't have the same kind of experience against high-level opponents that I think Patchy Mix has, the likes of Magomedov. But I do think he's getting the right challenges at the right time. What I will say, though, is I feel like Patchy Mix, being a southpaw with good knees and front kicks, he's going to be able to make the most of the fact that Bautista's quite heavy on his front foot and quite square.
Hmm.
But aside from that, I don't really know. I'm kind of hopeful that Patchy Mix lands in the UFC and resonates on the level in the rankings that everyone expects him to.
How do you think it's going to play out that he hasn't fought in like a year? And this is... And I'm going to give you, I felt in that performance that he didn't look totally like he wanted to be in there. Like, he didn't look excited to fight.
No, I don't, what, in, was it Paris?
Yes.
It? No, I agree with you.
That's just, like, because I was there, and that it was my first time watching Patchy Mix live. And I got the same feeling, like, when Alex Pereira fought, what's that Russian kickboxer, in his last fight. Glory. It was kind of like, I could tell you're fighting to fight out your contract, not because you want to be there, not because you really care, and you're not giving the best account of yourself that you owe yourself based on all the training that you've done, because you're just kind of a little bit like out of it.
I agree, yeah. I mean, the thing is, he'd already got a win over Magomedov.
Yeah, he'd submitted him.
Yeah. But I feel like this is, I mean, to have had any more fights outside of the UFC would have been just a waste time for him. I mean, he could have signed a fight earlier potentially, but I agree with you. He was kind of, and I think that this is maybe where we're going to get the best version of him because he's going to feel refreshed, you know.
Yeah.
It was interesting to listen. I listened to a Luke Thomas video on the PFL Bellator situation, and you know, it was interesting to get his take on it. But what I will say, and I won't elaborate very much at all, but people are massively underestimate some of those purses. Honestly, these guys, they're getting a good opportunity, but there's some serious pay cuts going on. There has to be because.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like in all the interviews, he said, I have the money already. This is for notoriety.
Exactly.
Like this is. And even when Kayla, because I've watched some of Kayla's interviews and stuff, she was like, I'm not doing this for money. It's just, it's about.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you look at that fight, that one in France. I mean, I was on comms for that one. Mm. And it was just, it was a very controlled performance, but it wasn't like, I think he's going to be a lot more vicious in this fight because I think he's going to be excited to be on the UFC platform.
Yeah, and it's 3 rounds instead of 5.
Yeah.
You don't have to control yourself that much. And, exactly. You know.
But like, it's clear that it's not about the money. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Which I like, especially at this point in his career, the pressure's off because he made a tremendous amount of money already. You know, so now it doesn't really matter what his purses are because now it's about the opportunity to solidify his name as one of the best bantamweights. I think Bautista's a good matchup for him. I do wonder whether Bautista's going to look a lot bigger than him. I know Patchy Mix is a tall and rangy fighter, but Bautista's very, very thick, very dense. And there's a concern that he could spend a lot of time controlling Patchy Mix up against the fence, head position, dirty boxing, and kind of slow the fight down.
Yeah.
You know what
and
I mean?
Just regarding Mario Bautista, I've always been a big fan. Since he got into the UFC, I've been a big fan. I really like the team that the MMA lab guys have going on. You have Kyler Phillips, Mario Bautista. They're a mm-hmm. good team. And Casey, the blonde kid.
Casey Kenny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they make a really good team. And the thing that helps them is they all have sort of different styles. And I think Sean O'Malley was part of that group at one point before, you know, leaving, making his own gym. But that level of guys on the mat and being young as well, mm-hmm. it's not, you know, it's like you guys are shaping
up. It's a hungry environment.
Exactly. Yeah. And Mario Bautista is really good. He's very aggressive. His boxing's good. He steps through. Sometimes his kicks, I don't know if it's a lack of flexibility, but they're slow in comparison to his actual speed. His kicks sometimes leave him vulnerable. They're good when they land, but the stiffness in his hip kind of create an extra second that leaves a gap opening to be exploited with somebody like that's paying attention, explosive, that has timing. You know, it only takes a few because he throws it often. So it only takes a few, like, little looks to see.
Yeah. So that's where I can see Patchy Mix having an advantage. Kicking and kneeing.
Yeah.
Damaging his lead leg because Bautista relies a lot on planting his weight on that lead leg to box. But he also presents his midsection a lot for knees and front kicks. Because of the way that he punches, he kind of swims a little bit with quite a square midsection. And this is southpaw the orthodox. I mean, Patchy can switch, but if I'm Patchy, I'm thinking about that rear knee to the midsection. You know what I mean? Especially if I'm under pressure. And then that'll break his posture, and then Patchy's submissions come into play. 13 out of 20 submissions.
The arm trap he has from the back is
a lot of guillotines.
So sick. And I can see it because I went back to some of his earlier fights and then see him be in the same position in later fights and see how he dealt with those problems that he had before. It didn't take so long to find a submission. He knew how to trick. And I think it was against Sergio Pettis that he was able to get a rear naked choke. Mm-hmm. And the trapping of the arm, it was really sick, you know. Like I had to watch it a few times to kind of see where he was going, like look for the color of the glove,
yeah,
to see what hand's doing what. It was really nice. He's really, I don't know, like scarecrowy.
Scarecrowy.
Yeah, like you know, but then really long arms, and he.
I'm just trying to get it. I'm trying to understand. I was feeling a bit more like what's his name, Ricky Gervais off The Office, but maybe I'm not scarecrowy.
I just don't want people to take it like the wrong way, you know.
Well, a bit like long and like he's got long skinny limbs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he's really good. Yes, exactly. He's good at wrapping people up with them.
Yeah.
When he has the back. And I was watching the difference between like when Sean Brady has it and when he has it, that he can be in the back and causing all sorts of things with his legs because they're so long, like a spider. And then, you know, Sean's been like a muscle tank. He just keeps like falling off when he's on his back. So there's a difference, and he knows how to use his body. And I think that's also why he can find so many submissions. Yeah. I think
He's got wicked skinny forearms that he gets underneath people's necks so quickly.
I bet it's nasty. I think Bautista, though, is really good with wrestling. I think he's seriously underrated. You know, I know he lost his debut to Corey Sandhagen, which also has very long limbs and it's good at attacking submission, something that can cause him issues with a fighter like Mix. But he did come in on a short notice, and we also know how good Corey Sandhagen is.
Yeah, he's got plenty of submissions on his own record as well. Mm. But I don't know. I think Patchy Mix is going to come in and guillotine him. I think he's going to catch him with a knee. Bam, midsection. Buckles him. Wraps him up with a guillotine. Jumps guard. First round.
But what if Bautista just denies every takedown?
Well,
Who do you think has the better strike?
You don't need to take him down if you knee him in the body and then jump guillotine.
I don't think Bautista would get guillotined.
You got armbar.
Yeah, but that's different.
I mean, it's different.
Armbar is not like a wrestler's type of thing.
No?
No.
I would say a wrestler is more susceptible to a guillotine because of where they put the head, though.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is, like, Bautista is good on, like, two-on-ones and ducking under and doing all these things. So I think he's very aware of his neck.
Yeah.
In order for it to get caught after a knee. And when he's hurt, he did get a lot of, you know, crap because of the Jose Aldo fight. To be honest, like, first round, he did fight, you know, he outstruck Jose Aldo, and he did a really good round.
Mm.
He did a great job. I know everybody loves Jose Aldo. I love Jose Aldo. But
what I will say, though...
Is it Jose Aldo? Is that what you're going to tell me?
It is Jose Aldo, but that's beside the point. I wasn't going to say that. What I will say...
Yeah?
Is that Patchy Mix guillotined Magomedov, and Magomedov is a guillotine expert. And he went into that fight knowing full well that Patchy Mix was a guillotine expert as well. And he still got guillotined.
I know. I'm not saying... Patchy Mix is not sick at submissions.
No, I know you're not. but what you're saying is that Patchy Mix's six submissions are still not going to be good enough to submit Bautista.
I don't think wrestling. You know what? I don't think Bautista is as mentally swayable as other fighters. I don't think he's very. I don't, and maybe
Magomedov's mentally swayable. I'm just, you know.
Look, I'm just, look. Mario Bautista is not really an Instagrammer. He's not a talker. He's not anything. He just, you know, he looks like the guy who works hard, shows up at the fight, goes back, works hard.
Sounds like UFC bias to me. Sounds like UFC bias to me. Yeah, but he's a UFC fighter. Like, yeah, Magomed's a killer.
Okay, all right.
No, I'm just.
Who are you going?
I think Patchy Mix is going to knee him in the midsection and in the rib, in the solar plexus. Steal his soul. Jump guillotine. Bautista's also got that haircut as well that makes guillotines a lot more difficult to escape.
Bautista's tough, man. People are underestimating him.
Tough.
Badly.
Tough. So tough he can breathe through his butthole. I'm just saying, you know. So when the wind gets knocked out of him, and then he gets wrapped up in the guillotine, he'll be able to breathe through another orifice. Because this is all going to be tangled up in a guillotine. It won't work.
Okay, I'm going with Mix as well.
Yes. I know she was going to pick the opposite way. I know I've convinced her. You were going to go Bautista. You were thinking that Bautista was going to
maybe
box
like
him
Bautista
up.
Like split decision, you know, box him up, defend some takedowns, have a horrible round,
well,
getting
that's the
like
way that you
almost
should pick. That's the way you should go.
No, I'm going to go with Patchy Mix being, you know, super excited about UFC. And, yeah, I think maybe it's just because when I saw him live, he didn't really.
I should pick Bautista there.
Next, let's go.
No, it's pronounced Mix.
I said next.
Oh, sorry.
All right, Kelvin Gastelum.
Oh, hang on. No, how is Patchy Mix going to win? Because I said guillotine first round. I've got a first and a second round finish right now on my picks card.
I think like a standing rear naked choke.
Standing rear naked choke.
You know, when they, you know, like the one that Oliveira does all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Body triangle.
Body triangle.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. First round, second round, third round.
Second.
Ooh, okay. Okay, right. Next fight. So we've got Kelvin Gastelum against Joe Pyfer. Kelvin Gastelum's only 33. Am I caught in a time warp or something? I thought he was like
40. A lot
40.
Of the people that comment.
I thought it was what, that I'm old or that we're caught in a time warp or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, caught in a time warp.
That's weird. I felt like Kelvin Gastelum was older than that. Maybe time's just passing really quickly.
No, the thing is that Kelvin Gastelum has had a lot of, you know, he went like at an earlier age.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Like, the amount of the wars that he's had. Well, exactly. So he's been around for a really long
time.
Man,
look at that. He did. He had six fights and then he went on the Ultimate Fighter. Damn. Won the Ultimate Fighter, beat Uriah Hall. When he was a massive underdog in that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I think Uriah Hall had that spinning back kick knockout.
Yeah, stiff that guy. That was
crazy.
Yeah. Man.
They became like best friends after.
Imagine if he'd have just like focused on staying at welterweight. I'm just looking at his record now. I mean, it's just all over the place. Like, he even got that win over Vitor Belfort overturned because he tested positive for weed. Like, what a win to have taken off your record. And the fights that he had as well, like the split decision against Darren Till and that decision against Adesanya was just epic. Mark Goddard still talks about that being
Yeah,
the best
he says,
fight
like,
ever
the
refereed.
Best. He's ever witnessed. He's almost like, thank you guys for letting me witness it.
He's been on the losing side of some epic fights. He really has. Probably his best performance was that knockout over Bisping. And that was a fight maybe Bisping shouldn't have taken. I feel like he had a quick turnaround, didn't he? Did he not lose to GSP and then... Yeah, Jesus, look at that. So he lost by... Technically, he lost by rear naked choke, but he got dropped bad in that fight, didn't he? And then GSP took his back.
Yes.
And that was on November 4th. And on November 25th, he was fighting Gastelum in Shanghai.
Jeez.
That's like 3 weeks later.
I think he
That was the slip back touch.
Yes.
Bang. That was a beautiful knockout.
What's funny is... because he fights at, like, middleweight and everybody, you know, kind of calls him chubby and stuff, sometimes he plays into it in the fight. Like, sometimes he'll be fighting and he'll play, like, chubby boy sway. He'll be like, sway, 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 and then come, like, really quick. But you kind of don't think about it. You don't see it coming because you just see this, like, you know, in your mind, chubby boy.
Yeah. He is quick off the mark.
But he is super
quick. Look at his stats. He's built like a lightweight. Like, he's got I mean, this is Wikipedia. I'll check stats in a minute. 71.5-inch reach, and he's 5'9". That's like average lightweight, isn't it? He's made it work well for him. I just always feel like he's kind of struggled along through a career that never reached the heights that it could have done. Especially when you see him in those fights with Adesanya that were just such, there were such epic fights.
It was sliding
to yourself, door. You think to yourself, man, this guy in a different circumstance.
On a different night, he would have won the fight.
I'm just talking generally, you know what I mean? Like, you can see he had that potential.
Mm.
And he's 20 wins and 9 losses.
Yeah, I feel like, and, you know, his Instagram thing is on a mission for gold and stuff and losing that and then having so many losses and then trying to get back and still trying to keep the... It was kind of like Tony Ferguson went through that bad streak.
Yeah.
And then he was still... What was his catchphrase? Oh, champs only or something. Was it like that?
Champshire only.
Yeah, so, something like that. And I think that kind of played into it because you, like, you gave it everything. He literally gave it everything that night, and it not so play out, but almost there, and then you just kind of like, oh, whatever. I'm not gonna. I don't know how much like lifestyle has affected after the losses.
Mm.
Is what I'm trying to say, and I don't just mean in the. In like the food wise, in like
in the food wise,
yeah, like diet wise, I don't really think it's because he doesn't have the capability of dieting. I just think maybe it's something like mentally as well. Like he's already given so much,
yeah.
That's just like one step that he's like I've already given enough.
Yeah, I'll do everything else, but I'm not cutting my calories.
Yeah, I'm not going to be miserable every day as
you
well.
I'll do this as long as you don't complain about what I'm eating.
Yeah. But he's like, he's a really good fighter. But he has very, very great head movement. And the good thing about his head movement, or like the thing that's also cool about his head movement, is that his head is always a bit further away than what you think it is. Or at least like when I'm fighting, like his center line, where a lot of fighters would have it up here, like his is further back.
Yeah.
And he's able to
then commit. He's got a long stance. But then the downside to that is that his leg gets smashed to pieces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm. That's always been the problem. He's got that nice little rock back and forth, but he pays for it because of his lead, because his lead leg happened to be so far forward.
So, yeah, he's fighting Joe Pfeiffer, and they were supposed to fight in Mexico.
Okay.
And then Joe Pfeiffer got sick.
He got sick.
Yeah, and then he blamed...
When he got to Mexico City and realized that he couldn't breathe after walking upstairs, he was like, tell them I'm sick or something, bro. Tell them, like, let's fight closer to sea level.
Yeah, what I don't understand is that before he fought Jack Hermanson, right, or, like, after he said, like, oh, I would face pneumonia, I had staph, I had all these bad things, right? And then he gets sick in Mexico and blames the entire country and then is confused as to why people are mad at him.
Was it the entire country's fault, though?
According to him.
Well, I don't know. Can't make an assumption that it wasn't.
Who told you to get your phone and open the internet? Like, just open it and put a live video out of you saying horrible things about it. Like, why didn't you have a friend that told you, hey, man, maybe you shouldn't do that?
Maybe his friend's Kobe Covington and Kobe. I've got a great idea for you, bro.
No, but like, I saw the interview with him and Ariel, and he's genuinely confused as to why people are so upset.
Well, let's see if...
Like, it took 30 minutes for him to then be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe what I said was wrong. It was not the people's fault. It's just the whole country that I ate Italian food at the hotel.
It was Italian food, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he said he had pizza, a margarita. He's like, no cheese. And then I had some lasagna, but it wasn't that big. And then I got really sick.
Mm.
To which... The UFC does provide you meals now. They didn't used to, you know, but now you can have, like, the nutrition team. They provided hydration, all the meals and stuff. If you choose to eat outside, that's then on you. Not that eating their stuff would, you know, make it any more or less. Good, but though. Why are you going to have lasagna and pizza? That's not even good things to have after a weight cut.
Don't know what to tell you. 28. He's only young.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he would say something like that. It just...
I mean, his nickname is Body Bags with a Z on the end. So who are you picking then? I feel like you're going to pick Gastelum just because you decided you don't like Joe Pfeiffer.
I'm not saying I don't like...
On behalf of Mexico and Italian food.
He's like, yeah, I'm not fighting anywhere else. That's not America. Because everywhere else is no good.
If there isn't an olive garden, I'm not fighting there.
Yeah.
Maybe his nickname's actually Doggy Bags and he That's why he likes Olive Garden, because they always give you way too much food.
I feel like he also had like back surgery after the Mario Bautista fight. So I think like he's been out for a little bit. I feel
after the Mario Bautista fight.
No, not Mario Bautista. Marc Antonio Barrau, or what's his name?
That's like a bit of a veteran boxer's name with a bit of someone that he actually did fight with a little bit of a
Marc Andre.
Yeah. Marco Antonio Barrio.
That's so close. Which way are you
picking? Which way are you picking? I kind of feel like this is an opportunity to try and get Piper back in the win column with a win over someone that people are going to recognize. I don't know, is Kelvin, I don't know. Like, where's,
yeah, like, I feel like the fight he had against, was this boy, the baseball looking dude? Rodriguez, Daniel Rodriguez.
Mm.
He made it a little bit harder than he should have with the skills that he has.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, he won the fight.
He's made most of his career more harder than he should have by, you know, missing weight and fighting up a weight class where he's not big enough. And
yeah, I just think Joe Piper's power is, and he's going to come out guns blazing because he's been getting a lot of crap for the not smart things that he said.
So you think Joe Piper then?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think so too. I feel like Gastelum might have the smarts to get through to a decision. If this was a five-rounder on the main event of a fight night, then I think Joe Piper would get to him. But I think Gastelum's going to be... I wouldn't even be surprised if Joe Piper catches Gastelum and thinks he's hurt, goes after him, and then Gastelum catches Piper and hurts him, and then that kind of settles him down. You know what I mean? But
I think Kelvin has the Piper better wins, like, striking.
Mm.
But Piper's power is an equalizer, and I don't think Gastelum has enough power to then like sway around to his side if he got dropped or something. Yeah. You know? Plus,
this is a bigger opportunity for Joe Piper fighting Kelvin Gastelum than it is for Gastelum. The motivation is different as well. I think Piper by decision.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Okay. Co-main event. Women's Bantamweight Championship. Juliana Pena against Kayla Harrison. Cold?
Yeah.
It's not that cold in here, is it, Jamie?
There's one person that keeps commenting that we should do the podcast in a tank top.
I don't think that's...
Are you going to pick the heating pills?
I don't think that's a we should do this. I don't think he's interested on the tattoos I've got on my shoulders. No. I don't think it's that kind of comment.
Said we.
Did he say we? Yeah. Maybe.
He was like, you guys, like, I want to see both of you in a tank top.
Is that what he said? Yeah. Or did he mean we as in like you and him? Like, you let him know what tank top you're going to wear and he's going to go out and buy the same one, the same size and wear it. So he can watch the podcast and feel like you while he's watching it. There's a lot of weirdos on the internet. This is why I don't read the comments. This is why I
didn't need it to
comments.
Be that weird lot, in my head.
There's a lot of lovely
just,
people.
I was very innocent about it.
I can save my conversations for lovely people for when I meet them in person. It's too much of a hit and miss on the internet. I don't bother with it. Okay, co-main event. So, Juliana Pena, if she's going to win this fight, in my opinion, she's got to make it exhausting and scrappy. And she's got to accept that she might lose a round or two. She's got to accept that she might get cut. She's got to accept that she might come off worse in some exchanges on the feet. But I think if she's adamant enough and she's able to force Kayla to work enough in the first two rounds, then she might be able to get to her, especially in the fourth and fifth. I really appreciate how game Juliana Pena is.
Mm.
But I feel like there's an unfortunate reality for her in this fight where it doesn't matter how game she is. If Kayla Harrison grabs a hold of her and puts her on the floor, there might not be anything she can do about it, no matter how much of a dog is in the fight. Do you know what I mean? And I hear fighters say that a lot of the time, and I always really appreciate that gameness, but sometimes I feel like it's like It's fuel that they're throwing on their own motivation fire by saying it out loud. You know? Like, whereas when Kayla says, like, it was interesting how they framed the countdown show. Did you watch the end of the countdown show?
Yes.
Right, so the press conference at the end. It was interesting how they framed it, because they framed it much more from Giuliano's perspective of, I was saying things and Kayla Harrison had nothing to come back with. When in actuality, I was seeing it more from Kayla's perspective of her going, it doesn't really matter what you say. Like, I'd love how confident you are, but the reality is I'm going to smash you. And like that for me has always been Kayla Harrison's vibe. Whereas like Juliana Pena is constantly trying to like talk herself up.
Yeah, because she's always been the underdog.
Yeah, for sure.
And Harrison's always been like the.
But I think the more she talks herself favorite. Up. Yeah, well, I mean, and you look at them side by side, and it makes sense why people would expect Kayla Harrison to do it. But like all of the qualities that Juliana Pena's got, that's got her to the championship, Kayla Harrison has. Like you can't tell me that she doesn't. The only thing that Kayla Harrison doesn't have, which I would say Juliana Pena's got the advantage of, is a slight advantage in technical striking, particularly boxing. Slightly more confident in range, slightly more confident when she's under pressure, right? She's better in situations where they're both throwing, because she's more composed, where they're the moments where Kayla will start to kind of lean away and bad habits start to creep in. And those bad habits also can be exhausting as well. Sorry, I keep banging the table. Those bad habits can be exhausting as well, right? Like, we talked about this a lot recently about like striking defense, like doing the right thing as a variety of different benefits, right? If I'm defending, and I can get out the way without expending too much energy, that's by far the most beneficial thing. But if I have to take that shot, I want to be as tight with that movement as possible, right? Because I don't want to open up other targets. And I don't want to waste energy having big movements, right? And when you feel panicked in those close situations, that's where your heart can race and you can exhaust yourself quicker. And if you shoot a takedown and it fails, and this is where I talked about this in the war room about Marab, like shooting three takedowns and failing the first two and still shooting the third. Like, there were certain moments in the fight where Kayla lost to Larissa Pacheco, where she shot and reshot and reshot, and Larissa Pacheco was able to dig and move and lift her up and twist and clear space. And you kind of saw Kayla go, oh, like, oh my God, like, that was a lot of energy that I expended and I didn't get anywhere with it. And then when Pacheco sees that, that's when she starts to move forward, and she's got good aggressive hands. She hits harder than Pena, I think, and she's bigger, of course. But the most important thing in that moment was that when Kayla Harrison had expended that energy trying and failed, and then she was in her least confident skill set of striking, she looked untidy under pressure.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And if I'm Juliana Pena, or if I'm her coaches, I'm thinking that's the version of Kayla Harrison that we need to create if we're going to beat her. Because any other version of Kayla Harrison, I don't think she can beat. But that version, that's the version she can beat. And I do think she has the skills to do it. She just has to have a very, very specific and direct game plan tailored for Kayla Harrison and what to expect.
I think they have two things that play against each other. Like, one for Pena is obviously the injuries. She's had a lot of injuries and, you know, not a career where she's fought as much as she would have liked. She did also become a mom and then come back and then had an arm injury, then the knee injury, I think a rib injury. So they've all been things that have taken her out. And then with Kayla, it's obviously making 135.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
that's the biggest challenge
for her. I feel like even if... and this is not towards Kayla, this is just, like, in general. If it's that hard for you to make the weight, I don't think you should even be, like, allowed to do it.
But the thing is, like, that the problem is that there aren't, like, what Kayla's looking for is a validation for her skills. Yes. And she can't do that in another weight class.
Yeah, I know. And it's a shame that they took away the 145 division because they didn't give it time to grow.
But then, like, but this is the thing is, like, yeah, I mean, they didn't give it time to grow. But then the other weight classes are not particularly strong either. I mean, particularly like the women's bantamweight. Like,
yeah, how long have women been doing this, though?
Oh, like, yeah, no,
they're
for
just
sure.
getting
no.
into it, and if it's improved, and by numbers, it's gone up tremendously, and it's... But then for, like, bigger girls, they're not going to get into it if they keep seeing these divisions get cut. Like, when they... See, what's the weight class? 135. Some girl weighs 170. You think she's going to be like, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, but right. Okay, but if you're the UFC and you've got four featherweights... And the best one among them is a former bantamweight champion. You know what I mean? Like,
that. Yeah, that, but that started to be an issue with the double champion thing. Because then they started to do 145s with, like, everybody from the bantamweight division that was sort of big. It was just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to fight here and not cut.
But that's because there aren't 45ers. That's the problem.
I know, but they didn't invest enough to make that a division. And they let people kind of jump back and forth, not making a clear division. So then when the people that really needed that division, they didn't have it. And now it's affecting the future and the future generations for, like, look at those rugby ladies. One of them come at me. I am running away.
Yeah,
they
for
are
sure.
massive.
For sure. But
imagine if they got into MMA.
For
like,
sure, but then the money's not in it. In MMA. I don't know whether it is in rugby, but the money's not...
The money in female sports isn't there anyway. So might as well, like, you know, it's more likely for women to cross over than for a guy to choose MMA over basketball, for example, is what I'm saying.
I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying.
No, like, I just... That was just like an additional, like a side...
An additional side ramp. But what I'm saying right now...
Yeah.
Kayla Harrison wants validation in the sport of MMA, and she can't do that at featherweight.
I understand.
There isn't an option. And I feel bad for her because I feel like her career at bantamweight is very, very short-lived. And I feel like she could potentially do some damage to herself making this weight class. But there isn't an option for her. Like, the UFC are not going to bring in a featherweight division so she can beat up Macy Chasson and who was the other person that fought last night? Caitlin Vera. Like, they ended up fighting at featherweight, didn't they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It kind of like...
But, like, they're just... Like, there are no good options. That's the problem. That's the problem with Kayla Harrison. It was the problem that existed when she was in the PFL. Like, it's one of the reasons why Cyborg was an important person to come over along with Bellator was because then we've got a legitimate, dangerous featherweight, you know?
Yeah.
Larissa Pacheco's a more natural featherweight.
Yeah, I think she's grown into the division as well.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
But, like, Pena is also, like, really big.
Yeah, but not big enough to be a featherweight. You know what I mean? Like Pena next to Larissa Pacheco would look small now. Larissa Pacheco's, you know, grew into the weight class at lightweight.
I don't know, man. I saw her in Miami, and she looked real big.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Pena did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. She's like...
She was wearing heels as well. But her arms look like...
She's built a bit like Gastelum, though.
Yeah,
She's got more upper body.
Yeah, more...
You know, Larissa Pacheco is just big generally. Like, Kayla Harrison's big generally. Whereas, like, you're going to stand Kayla Harrison next to Juliana Pena, and the size and the muscle mass on Kayla Harrison's frame is what's going to make the big difference. And that's another reason probably why Juliana Pena has had so many injury problems. And I'm sure Kayla Harrison has, but she's a fucking muscle machine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and I think that's what it's going to look like when she gets a hold of Pena. I think for as tough and as durable as Pena is, it's more likely that something's going to dislocate or break her trying than if she just goes with it and just, you know. Like, what's she going to do? She's going to use butterfly hooks?
Imagine if she gets armbar. Because that's the submission that Pena's been caught in by...
Kayla Harrison isn't going to bar anything. She's
yeah, but she's snapping. Done it in judo competitions, you know?
I think the only thing to do is to put Kayla Harrison in cryostasis and give Brock Lesnar's daughter 10 years to learn MMA. Holy moly.
That's what I'm saying. Like, imagine women this size get like.
She's terrifying.
Yo, I'm telling you, I just go to any rugby club and just be like, all of you, let's go.
But like, you look what Kayla Harrison does to fighters, and then you think, okay, now she's got, like, she was fighting in the PFL when she couldn't use elbows as well. Like, now she can use elbows. I think she beats Pena, and I think she holds the belt for as long as she can make weight. And I think that's the reality of her title reign, is it will be dependent on how long she can stay healthy as a bantamweight, which I don't think is very long.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, even if she wins, it's a little bit like, yeah, but you're not really a bantamweight.
But then, to be honest, I mean, what's she got left? I mean, like, does she need more than two fights? I would say she needs three fights if she loses to Amanda Nunes in her next one.
But what does that do to the division if she just goes, wins twice, and then leaves? That's kind of like when GSP came, beat Bisping, and then just left the division.
Doesn't matter. Think about it from GSP's perspective.
No, yeah, exactly. From their perspective, same thing with John Jones, fine. Right?
I could do a whole video on this. We even talked about it earlier.
Did you sign the petition?
No, I didn't. No. No. Like if you John Jones, why would you fight Tom Aspinall? It would be crazy. Tom Aspinall is a real heavyweight.
Because I don't want to have spent very fast. That time in my career building up, having the best records. For now, my lasting thing is a bunch of social media people calling me a duck. No.
He should have just retired after he beat Stipe and been like, I'm done, I'm out. Like, I think he just enjoys being
cynical about it. I think he's one of the most...
I don't know. I don't think he likes it. I think John's... I don't think he likes messing with
I think
John's
Tom.
A sensitive soul. And I think he said a couple of things a couple of times, thinking that it was going to be received one way and it was received another. Like when he was saying, oh, come on, guys, you really want me to fight Pereira? And everyone's like, no, bro, you just don't want to fight Tom Aspinall. We know what you're saying. We can hear it. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think John was thinking in his head, yeah, no, but Pereira's like a scary dude, so the fans will dig it that I'm going to fight one scary dude instead of another scary dude. When in actuality, and this is like a bigger philosophical conversation around, especially the heavyweight championship. Like, the thing that a champion represents, and especially a heavyweight champion, is they're not afraid of anybody. You know?
That's man on the planet.
Like exactly. That's what legitimizes that belt, is the person holding it is like, yeah, whoever, you're dead. I am the best. You know? And as soon as you get a little bit of, yeah, but you know, I'm probably gonna need 6 months to prepare for him, or I don't think he deserves to fight me. And those kind of things.
Yeah, but like, okay, you can't not see that and think he's
I'm not disagreeing with John. I don't think, no, because this is the thing, right? Even if it was a negotiating tactic, it's a bad one because it's devalued his brand as the heavyweight champ. Like, you would never hear Mike Tyson, not even now, saying those kind of things. And that's why Mike Tyson has been held in such high regard by combat sports fans, because he represents something that's so fearless and so animalistic and dangerous that's what you want the heavyweight championship to be represented by. Not necessarily the Mike Tyson as he was in his 20s, just like you don't necessarily want the heavyweight championship to be represented by the early 20-year-old John Jones because he was as chaotic as Mike Tyson was. Not quite, but you know what I mean?
Hmm.
But that's almost like the other side of the same coin of, well, but this guy's an animal when you lock him in a cage or a ring with someone. Whereas now, as soon as you start hearing, like, even if, like imagine Mike Tyson was the heavyweight champ right now, right? And there's Tyson Fury and there's Anthony Joshua. And everybody wants to see Mike Tyson fight Tyson Fury because that's the fight to make. And he's going, yeah, but you guys want to see me fight Anthony Joshua, don't you? And straight away, everyone starts to look at Mike Tyson and go, hang on a minute, bro. Like, you shouldn't even, like, you, this, it doesn't matter to you. because everybody falls at your feet because you're the heavyweight champ, you're the king of the jungle. Like, and that's where for me, John Jones, every day he doesn't put a date out, it just decimates his brand.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
that's. I mean, there's literally a petition to strip him.
Yeah.
Like the moment a petition would be created to strip me of a championship, I'd just hand it back. That's what a horrible circumstance to be in. I've never ever heard that.
Dude,
that.
All the comments now are like strip John Jones and a duck on everything. Everything Dana White, everything UFC, everything like MMA related is all spamming of strip John Jones.
The thing that's horrible about it though is that John Jones legitimately is one of the baddest men on the planet. And he may well be still the best pound for pound fighter that we've ever seen in mixed martial arts. Not that Tom Aspinall wouldn't beat him now, but John Jones is a light heavyweight in his prime.
Yeah, of course.
Right? But this is the thing, is like just like the McGregor knockout like dismantled Aldo's legacy in the new fans' eyes.
Mm.
John Jones is doing the same thing to his legacy, but he's doing it himself. Aldo did it by getting wound up and running onto a cross.
That seems like a John Jones thing to do.
It does. It's self-sabotage, right? It is. It's very much a John Jones thing to do. But it's like it's unfortunate because along with John, he's also taking the reputation of the heavyweight championship. And if you diminish the championship, it just kind of crushes everything else underneath it.
Mm.
It's weird. It's like that's why instinctively heavyweights are held in a much higher regard, even though the fights are not necessarily as exciting as a bantamweight or a featherweight, is because, well, as Dana says, you know, if you put John Jones in a room with this guy, he's going to come out. I'm like, yeah, probably. I don't think so with Tom Aspinall, though. I think Tom beats the brakes off John now. And I think John's just lingering as the champion for as long as he can. And I think the UFC are supportive of it because it's good for their TV rights negotiations.
Hmm.
Same reason why they won't let McGregor fight, even though he wants to.
You think he actually wants to fight?
I think if the right circumstance would have been created for him, which the UFC absolutely could have done, because they can do anything, they own the industry, then we would have got McGregor fighting. Like, they got rid of USADA to keep McGregor.
Personal experience with this new thing.
Hey, they showed up on a bank holiday, though, didn't they?
They show up, like, once a century.
Yeah. Only if you live in Europe, though.
Yeah.
If you live in Brazil, they've never come to see you.
And they come with, like,
you live
these,
on a
like,
boat,
weird plastic cups.
You. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I know. Juliana mentioned
it. Sandwich bag. That don't seem like
a... I know Juliana mentioned it against Kayla, and I'm not... It's nothing to do with Kayla or anything. I think her mentioning about the drug thing is correct. Like, it is not as good as it was before. Like, they used to come with glass bottles and everything was very good. And now it's like, choose one of these four. Although before you choose between the four, but these is like a basic box.
Yeah.
Everything is, this one time it was like not even clipping on properly.
Stuff.
Exactly. It was really... really downgraded.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. To who are you going? I think Pena can have
what
a smart...
What are we talking about? I feel like we've gone so far off.
Sorry.
Tangents.
Pena can... I think sometimes she... like she did against Amanda, like kind of holding off.
Mm-hmm.
And the not being the aggressor, which was not what happened in the second fight.
Yeah.
I think those sort of things can get Kayla Harrison really frustrated.
Yeah.
To a point where she's like, I need to be clinched up. But then if...
That was a weird fight. I watched that one again today.
Yeah.
Like, I know we were just talking about John Jones and a bit of self-sabotage. That one felt a little bit like Amanda Nunes' self-sabotage. Like, it felt a little bit like she was in a car and she knew that it was going off the road and she was just like, oh, fuck it, I'm foot on the gas, let's go.
Dude, she's champion for so long. Like,
I know,
you
it
get to
almost
the,
seemed
like
that.
Alex Pereira had the same sort of thing, and I think at some point it gets to all of them. And I think that's kind of like what you can bank on, no matter what, is that will happen to you eventually, unless you leave.
Like, think we watched a couple of fights the other day, didn't we? We sometimes go back and watch some older fights. We watched Frankie Edgar, Gray Maynard, the trilogy.
Dude, that was insane.
Like, Amanda Nunes wasn't as hurt as Frankie Edgar was in several points of those fights. But instead of doing what Frankie Edgar did and, like, disengaging and moving or clinching, she stood and she threw down. And it's like she was already hurt, so she had to respect the fact that Peña had power. So the fact that she chose to do that almost seems to me like she was like, I'm just whatever. I'm just going to roll the dice.
Yeah, whatever, because it worked out. Like, it worked out against Cyborg. So yeah. Why wouldn't it work out against Juliana
Peña? She was already hurt, whereas against Cyborg, she wasn't. Like, she
didn't come out with the same energy. She fought, yeah. Like, it's like what we were talking about, Mix's last fight in Paris. It was kind of like, I'm just going to get it over with, because Kayla was in the audience, yeah. Right? And then when Peña won, Kayla was like, oh, F, you know, like,
yeah,
shit, like the money fight was going to be against Amanda. Yeah. This girl just came in, what, you know, what happened?
Yeah, it's interesting. Because I think now Amanda seems really animated about coming back and fighting. And I think specifically she wants to fight Harrison, because that's a legitimate test for her to come back for. But I do wonder where she was at that point, because she just left ATT, hadn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And she just seemed a little bit unsettled. But it just seemed really reckless. And I know that she can be reckless at times in her fights. And she can a little bit kind of get drawn into the brawl and let her...
It just looked like, you know, she wanted it to be over with already.
Exactly that.
Like, let's just get so I can, yeah. You know. And yeah, like that happens. And you don't even have to be at the top for that thing to happen, as crazy as it sounds. But it does happen. And it's...
But there were even a couple of moments in those exchanges where she landed and she could have really hurt Peña. But I still feel like... They both show the level of composure which I don't feel like Kayla Harrison would have in that type of exchange, especially if she's tired.
Do you think it's because she hasn't been like...
She's doing this kind of stuff. And...
I guess as... Not that the others weren't favorites and so... Well, not Peña, but like Amanda was favorites in some fights later on in her career before it was kind of, you know, like sort of even when she fought. But Kayla's always been favorite.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
I can't think of one fight where she's not.
Well, I wonder who Kayla has coming into ATT. I mean, because she's going to have male sparring partners that are going to be good strikers, mm-hmm. but I don't know who else she's got. I mean, you know, Dakota's probably a decent sized bantamweight right now, but she's still going to be really small compared to Kayla. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As far as physicality goes. So I would imagine even if they were sparring, Kayla's going to be able to push her around and kind of cover up, and, you know, I wonder who else there is that would be of a size that Kayla would respect, that would have the striking skills to be able to show Kayla what she could be up against, you know. And this is not necessarily against Peña, because I feel like Peña's got good boxing and good boxing instincts, but I feel like her skill set is limited there. I don't feel like there's a great deal of other dangers in her skill set aside from pace and determination and boxing. Like that for me is what wins her this fight. Whereas Kayla Harrison, I would imagine her striking's improved, but I also think her striking is going to be more disciplined if she's winning than if she's losing. And if she's losing, she might be running out of gas. I mean, again, this is, you know, it's a championship. There's five rounds in this. But it's gonna be about Peña's mentality. If she loses the first two rounds, I think, does she come out in the third and be like, right, I'm bloodied and I've lost two rounds, but I can see she's starting to breathe heavy, you know. I think Harrison beats her. I think she beats her quite soundly. I think probably a TKO. But I do see a way for Peña to win. You know, and I do think that if she plays her cards right, she can put Harrison in a position where she's beatable. I just think 8 times out of 10, if they fought, Harrison does the same thing. Gets inside, clinches her, takes her down, and she's just too much on the floor. Passes her guard, irons her out, makes it look easy. Crucifix, elbows until the referee stops it. Bloody mess in about 4 minutes.
I'm going to go with Peña by decision.
Okay. Venezuelan vixen sticking together.
It's because I interviewed her and she was like ultra nice to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why.
And then like it was for UFC Spanish and they put some horrible music during the like edited into the video, which was as loud as the interview. I couldn't even watch it. And I asked them, I was like, please don't put that because it's so distracting. It's horrible. And they did it anyway. And people commented and I agreed and they were like, wow, you even agreed with them. And I said, I told you before.
Told you before.
Not to do it. So if you do it anyway,
I'm and gonna people like say all the comments.
I'm going to like every.
And people say I'm right. Veronica was right. We don't like the music.
How are you going to have an interview and have the sound to be as loud as the interview? Elevator music.
Mm.
Ah, can you imagine? Can you imagine headphones and trying to listen to that? I was so angry. I thought
still
it was pretty
angry,
good.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Juliana Pena.
Yeah, decision.
Okay.
People are going to be like, this wow. guy's crazy.
Yeah, crazy. With a capital K. Okay, main event, Bantamweight Championship, Merab Dvalishvili, rematch in Sean O'Malley, former champion. So Merab has defended his belt once. An impressive fight against Umar Nurmagomedov. Sean O'Malley has not fought since then. He's been hanging out in the pool and not smoking any
the interview with John Anik when he was like, oh, you quit a bunch of stuff, right? Like you quit cannabis and stuff. And then Sean O'Malley laughs. And then Anik's like, oh, why do you laugh? And it's like, oh, no. Kind of, he was kind of saying like, oh, everybody's making a big deal about the weed thing.
Mm.
And it goes, I quit, but I'm not a quitter. Like I quit smoking,
yeah,
weed, but I'm not a
but
quitter.
But he's not a quitter.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's probably not then.
It was really funny. You just ruined it.
Sorry. Did you make it unfunny?
No. It was like.
So it was funny.
It was
until
funny
you...
because it was like, you know, like a sly comment. Okay. You weren't even, it was on ESPN, I think, or something. It was like a serious sit down one. And he just, you know, said it like as a joke, real funny, sly. But if you just stare at me and make it awkward, then it's not funny.
So it's not funny, or it is funny.
No.
It was
you
funny.
You ruin my jokes.
I ruin your jokes. How do I do that?
But having a horrible sense of humor.
Oh, is that right?
It's so bad.
Okay, main event.
Talents are wasted.
your humor's wasted on me. Because my humor's so nuanced, isn't it?
So boring.
Boring.
The joke has to take like 45 minutes for you to, you to laugh.
It's not true at all. It just has to be funny.
I'm funny. You only laugh when I say I'm funny. Okay. That's not funny. Yeah.
We'll run a poll on the channel. Is Veronica funny?
If she wears a tank top. If I win the poll, I'll wear
yeah,
a tank top.
That'll be it. It'll just be that guy. He'll set up 1,000 channels. And...
Okay.
Okay. Main event.
Okay, he hasn't just been sitting by the pool. He also had like a hip surgery, which he has.
All right.
We were already talking about the main event before you went main event back to introduction.
Was
so
there?
Don't be like I'm random.
We were?
Yes, we were.
Okay. I never did all the stats or anything, but it doesn't really matter, does it? You can look up yourself what the stats are. The main event, I've done a war room for. I did it before this, so I go through all the stats on there. I'll sum up in succinctly, roughly what I said for the war room, and then you can tell me what you think. And that'll save you watching it. So, I think Merab can do the same thing as he did last time. And I think what he did last time very well was control his pace. I think he took moments and minutes in the fight where he didn't really do much, but he gave you the impression that he was going to do something. I also think that the fact that he doesn't get discouraged when he fails is a superpower of his. He lands one every three takedowns. And I think the fact that he can just keep going and keep mauling and fail and keep recovering and not be shaken psychologically, I think he's a big asset for him in this fight. even if he loses a round or he gets hurt or whatever, like, he's still able to recover psychologically very, very quickly. Even if it's just on the surface, he recovers very quickly. I feel like Sean O'Malley realized in the last round that working the body was the right thing to do, which he was doing from the start of the fight, but he was doing it with his straight cross instead of his front kick. And when he did it in the fifth round with the front kick, it worked really well. So I think he's going to go back to that. And I think that I think most likely O'Malley's going to be going front kick to knees to counter punches. And although his right hand is his money weapon, I feel like he'd be better to use that this time to get Merab biting to set up his left hook. Because Merab's been hurt a couple of times with the left hook, Moraes and Cejudo. And he was doing some guard stuff on the countdown show, but I'm putting that down to trolling. Because I'm hoping he's not going to try.
Yeah, I saw he like jumped guard.
He was doing armbar drills and stuff from guard, but he was also wearing wrestling shoes when he was doing them. So I'm like, hang on a minute. Is this something he was doing for the cameras just to kind of punk us before he goes back to wrestling practice?
Yeah. The thing what I saw about that countdown is that he was working with this wrestler looking guy to like defend takedowns up against the wall, and he did really good at defending them. But it was kind of... he wasn't defending takedowns off of his strikes, right? It wasn't like he was striking, and as he was striking, the guy was going under, and then he was starting the defense. He was starting the defense at an already defensive position, which is neutral, right? You're not overextended, because on some of the takedowns that he did, like one, his hip was all the way to the other side when he threw like a cross, and that's when Merab went under. And that's really where the takedown started to play a factor. I don't think he threw a lot of kicks in the beginning because he thought, I'm going to have to, you know, it's going to give him easy takedowns. But I feel like when the takedowns were kick related, he was able to defend single legs and things really well out in the open. It was more when he was getting smothered and crushed down, because if you see, there's quite a big height difference. So he just grabbed the top of the lever and like bended him, which didn't allow him to work the way that he would have liked.
Yeah, yeah.
And like Merab is, he's really short, which he can get like under for a takedown really quickly because he's really short. It's like doing a deadlift when you're 5 foot tall. You do not have to lift that, you know?
That's why, like, my lifting sucks. It's too tall.
You're too tall. I'm short. I can do it real quick. And yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, those things, of course, that's just off a countdown video where you have, like, 30 seconds and they can put whatever and you don't know what they're putting.
Yeah, but the thing you is, know, like, but... I always watch the countdown shows with that in mind. So when I am watching something, I'm like, okay, what, like, how much guard drilling is he doing if he's wearing wrestling shoes? Was the first thing I thought when I saw O'Malley doing that, which then made me think to myself, okay, well, the fact that he's wearing wrestling shoes... but he's doing guard drills and the camera's there. It's like he's probably doing that for the camera.
Yeah.
You know?
But I don't like doing... I don't like the idea of doing wrestling defense with wrestling shoes when you're fighting Merab.
But is that an injury? Does he have an injury? Or does he have soft skin on his feet? Is his skin delicate?
Well, I don't know. You'd have
to... the mat's cold. There's a lot of reasons to wear wrestling shoes. Most of the time in the UK, people wear socks, don't they?
It's like, cold.
Like 95% of the people on the mats at jiu-jitsu schools, aside from maybe like 2 months in the middle of the year,
you most have people to wear are wearing socks. Yeah. Honestly, it really hurts if you hit like one of your little toes on people as you're...
on a cold leather bag. Stings. It's not nice.
I have jokingly mentioned this to him once and he went on a rant.
Yeah, but you know, I have to condition you psychologically as a coach to not whinge about things like that. In this circumstance, we're both whinging about it, but we're hoping the wife in this circumstance.
Okay.
As soon as we cross that barrier into the gym, nightstand goes. Coach stands back.
I didn't even know there was a nightstand.
I've got a handmade mug that says number one coach on it, so can't argue with me.
It also has a lot of hearts on it.
I'll show you the cup. Be like, look, this is my qualification. I'm going to glue it to the wall of the gym. So I've always got
this has nothing to do with the podcast now. We're out of practice. I mean,
there's a lot of practice at staying on topic.
The reason why I mentioned the wrestling boots and O'Malley with doing that is because the wrestling boots, like, man, I find them a little bit scary sometimes, because sometimes your foot gets stuck.
Yeah.
And if people start twisting, you can end up losing an ACL.
That's why there's so many injuries with football. Football and soccer and football and both the same thing, because of the studs.
Yeah, and it's just, like, you can get a grip on the floor, so you have a better push, and takedown defense that you would have got with shoes on, you might not get it without shoes. And even wrestlers talk about the difference with the laces. Like, sometimes you go for a takedown and you're more likely to get the single leg because people have the, you know, there's some friction with the lace and all of that. Not saying that he, you know, why he was wearing it. Who knows? Who cares? And
well, I mean, we've spent ten minutes speculating on something we've got no idea, but it's interesting. It's an interesting topic.
I saw the co-main event, and I saw Merab and Sean, and I didn't speak to either of them, but I spoke to some of the people that were interviewing them, and it was kind of like, Sean was hard to interview, man. He was just
really, he was
very serious. He didn't come with anything else. He was like, just came in sort of, I wouldn't say like in a bad mood, but not looking like how Merab normally does. You know, he was just kind of giving one word answers, being really hard to difficult like to interview. And,
I wonder if that's kind of related to what he was saying on the Countdown show about him being sugar too much, the character.
And that's kind of, I feel, what Merab does so well at playing into that factor of other fighters. Like, he played into that against O'Malley, I believe. You know, it was his fear. And as much as it was headlined by both, it was the sugar show. And then Merab was the one that was there to, you know, get knocked out, basically.
Yeah, I just don't think O'Malley looked himself. He just didn't move very well. And I talk about it all in the war room. I feel like he's going to be like, O'Malley's going to be a very, very different version of himself. But then, like, the downside to that potentially is that he's going to try harder to land the shots that he didn't land in the last fight. And it's going to make Merab's life a lot easier to catch him off guard and take him down.
But what about just more volume from O'Malley?
It's still going to do the same thing, though, isn't it? He's still better to be strategic in the way that he's picking Merab apart. Because, like, just two front kicks in that last round did a lot of damage. If he'd have done them in the first or second, that would have changed the landscape of the fight. I think the more O'Malley overextends himself, the more dangerous the fight becomes for him.
Yeah, but if more volume doesn't necessarily mean more power shots at your opponent. I think he tries, like, in the corner, they keep telling him, oh, you're a sniper, you know, you're this. And the thing with, like, with a year sniper, like, sometimes you take too long to take the shot.
Yeah, but that's also not, that was the case against Merab, but that's not always the case with O'Malley. Like, a lot of the time he's good at pressuring people into a circumstance where he can knock them out, or pulling them into a circumstance where he can knock them out, like he did with Aljo. With Merab, and I feel like this was partly because O'Malley wasn't moving very well, but he was waiting on Merab instead of creating those opportunities himself by pushing or pulling. And I think that was partly because he didn't have the footwork to support him to do it. So he then found himself waiting for the right moment. And I think that right moment would have probably presented itself if you got Merab of two or three fights earlier. But the Merab that showed up was like, 1 minute, move in, fainting, move in, disengage, move away, move away. Move, 1 minute of this, and then, okay, right, now I'm in, and now I'm going to start doing stuff, and I'm going to kick. And so it was like, O'Malley's like, okay, I'm waiting. Oh, now it's too much. It's like feed and famine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if Merab is in fourth gear, like he was up to the Cejudo fight, right, most of his career, he's just right, fight starts, into fourth gear, fifth gear if I need it, if I need to raise my game like he did against Umar. Like, he's got that additional gear, but usually he'll sit in fourth gear regardless of whether he needs fourth gear or not, right? He could win the rounds in second or third, but automatic is fourth gear. Whereas if Marab had got into this fight and just kind of cruised at that pace, that would have been a steady food source for O'Malley to feed off for his counters,
mm-hmm.
right? And the reason why I'm using a food analogy for this is it is because if you think about the pace as in Marab's either giving you a steady trickle of food that you can eat at a steady pace and feed off, or he's going to give you a big pile of food that you can't get through. So you're going to choke on it, or it's going to be wasted. And then all of a sudden there's a gap and there's nothing. So then all of a sudden you're hungry and you're waiting. And then all of a sudden a massive load of food comes again. That kind of seemed like the way that Marab was playing it. It's like he wouldn't do anything while O'Malley was waiting for something. And then as soon as he started working, he committed to it for a good 2 minutes. And O'Malley was like, oh, deal with it, deal with it, deal with it. And then Marab had like intentionally pumped the brakes again. And then O'Malley's like, oh, I'm glad he stopped. Okay, I'll be ready when he gets started again. And then he doesn't until the next round. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was like that like weird ebb and flow. Because O'Malley was waiting on Marab and Marab's pace wasn't consistent, it didn't give him the stimulus that he needed. Even, you know, if he was 7 out of 10 health, he might have still been able to beat Marab of a couple of fights before if Marab had been fourth gear Marab. But this was Marab going from second to fourth to second to fourth. And O'Malley just never found the right pace of feeding.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of how it felt to me when I was watching it. I watched it back a few times. I'm like, it just seemed like it was awkward for O'Malley the whole time, but not necessarily because Marab was doing the right things, although he was, but partly because O'Malley couldn't change through his own gears because he didn't have those gears with him in the fight. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, against other opponents, he wouldn't be able to shift through gears. But he didn't have it in that fight. And I think he felt like he was probably going to be able to win anyway. And it was such a big opportunity and event that he couldn't watch anybody else be in that superstar place. But he just had a dead fish performance.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the rematch because I think we're going to get another improved version of Marab. But I think that improved version of Marab is going to be fighting the best version of Sean O'Malley yet.
Who are you going with?
I think O'Malley's going to catch him.
Yeah.
And we might see like a Tony Ferguson front kick to the face with Marab. Like that.
Mm.
The thing is with Marab, like I actually think he's been very good in his last couple of fights because he's not been so foot on the gas. Because I think when he's foot on the gas, patterns start to come out more because he's doing more, you know? And I think the more he does, the more his patterns are exposed and the more food there is for O'Malley to feed off of. And there's going to be certain things that he does where he dips. And there's something that O'Malley's picked up on where he'll be able to set him up. And the more Marab is trying to work, the more opportunities O'Malley will have. I can see it being something up the centre, though. Front kick, knee, something like that. If I was O'Malley, I'd be looking for the left hook, though, because they're the two times we've seen Marab really hurt, both left hooks. And even in the, like, there's a, I almost took a screenshot of it, sent it to Jamie to drop in while we're talking about it, but I'll let the people do the work for themselves and go and find it. But there's a time when Marab's hitting pads and his pad man throws the mitt and his hand's here. And it catches him right on the chin. And that's literally this countdown show that's just gone up today. So it's still there.
Mm.
And you know what it's you know what it's like. If you've got a wicked right hand and people are so cautious of this, even if he throws it a few times and catches Marab on the gloves or on the forehead and just kind of jars him with it a couple of times, Marab's going to start thinking about that being the direction of danger, which is going to make him even more susceptible for that left hook. And the shoulders swaying for the cross comes back for the left hook. So that's what I'd be thinking if I was O'Malley. Left hook from orthodox, off the cross.
Is that how you're calling it?
I think O'Malley's going to stop him, yeah.
I thought it was a bit... I saw an interview that I just came up with by Anthony Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He did a great job on the interview, I really enjoyed it with Marab. Now I might be getting the interview mixed up. Yes. No, sure? He was, yes, yes, no, definitely, definitely. Definitely.
Kind of definitely.
No, definitely, because John Anik made the other joke.
Right.
With O'Malley.
Okay.
And Marab looked a bit tired.
Did he, yeah?
Yeah. That's like a strange thing to say, but he just looked...
I wonder if it's because he's hosting. He's got like a house full of people.
Oh, he was happy to have his... They're like a sponsorship, the dumpling thing. He's like collab
really?
With it.
They
yeah.
did look good, I'll be honest. They did,
yeah, I was thinking, oh, we'll probably order some when we're in America. Yeah, they did look like yeah, pretty good. Look good.
So how are you picking it?
I think, yeah, I still think Marab.
You think, yeah. What, yeah. decision?
Yeah, decision.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I still think Marab. I think he's going to get hurt in the fight.
Mm.
But Marab can be out and he'll still be fighting.
Yeah, very true.
As we've seen. So, yeah. I am a little bit concerned that this is a rematch and he looks like he's grown to be a fan. Like, not a fan, but starting to like O'Malley. And sometimes you see it when the fighter... When you have, like, a fighter that beats you, but you like them, so you're kind of, like, clapping. Yeah. A bit like Brandon Moreno with Figueroa. You kind of, like, start to like him.
But I think Marab and Aljo are really, really close, and I bet Marab puts it on Aljo most of the time. I don't think that's going to make too much of a difference. I think Marab's just a handful, whether he's your best friend or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got good mechanics, man. When he picks up those big ladies, you have to have good mechanics. Like Kayla Harrison, the same weight class, but she's a lot bigger than him.
I'd rather fight Marab. Definitely. All right, should we leave it there?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed it. UFC 316 should be a good one. Check out the War Room. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, get us back in the algorithm because we've been out for a little while. And we'll see you next time.